The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey, Billy, why don't we tell them what we're about, man?
So we're here to welcome you to the Madhouse Chronicles. It's a talk show with myself, Billy Morrison.
And me, Ozzy Osbourne.
This man, Prince of Darkness. And we watch and react to the maddest internet clips. What do we discuss, Ozzy?
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, all that kind of shit.
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, and all that kinds of shit. Come and join Ozzy and myself. Visit osbournemediahouse.com to get special access to...
Come on!
What do you say? Do you think it's the wildest show on the internet?
Oh.
Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar, where we sit down and talk with interesting professional guitar players, uncover their stories, and discover what makes them tick. If you love guitar, music, and the backstory of people's lives, stick around. You're in the right place. Hi, this is Craig. Just want to let you know you can now advertise here on Everyone Loves Guitar podcast. For more information, go to everyonelovesguitar.com/advertise. That's everyonelovesguitar.com/advertise. Hey, everybody. This is Craig Garber with Everyone Loves Guitar. And we've got a great guitar player, really cool guy. And this is going to be an interesting conversation because he's got a really totally different background than like any of the other 350 people I've interviewed. I'm with one and only John Levin from Dokken. He is just a phenomenal shredder. He began playing piano at age 4, trumpet by age 7, and guitar at 9. And instead of having formal lessons, he played along to his favorite musicians like Randy Rhoads and Eric Clapton, and later actually George Lynch from Dokken, whose place John would eventually take. He played in a club. Was that weird for you, by the way, when you like you grew up playing Doc and stuff, and then you got you took George's job? Basically, was it weird?
Hey, you know what? What could be a better childhood dream than to get into your favorite band with one of your guitar players that you looked up to? You know.
Yeah, yeah. That was very politically correct.
Well,
I know. True. No, I know it's true, but that was good. He played in a club band called Devias at age 19 in the Long Island, New York area, and then he auditioned for and joined the German band Warlock at age 22. When the grunge scene took over in the early 90s, now here's when it gets interesting. John took a break from being a musician because he wasn't interested in playing grunge. He relocated to the West Coast, and dig this, he became an entertainment lawyer. In his capacity as an entertainment lawyer, he served as legal counsel on a myriad of licensing programs, including Orange County Choppers, Dog the Bounty Hunter, American Hot Rod, and Rockstalgia. In 1998, John got a call from Jeff Pilson, that's Dokken's bassist, who asked him to play some solos on a demo. He thought he'd be playing on a solo album for Jeff Pilson, but when he gets to the studio, the whole Dokken band is there. John played on a Dokken track called Dancing, which is the Irish song, which was originally supposed to be included on the Erase the Slate album, but was later included on the Long Way Home import instead. John didn't join the group, however, until 2003. He's been on the last 3 Dokken records, and he currently tours with the band. John, thanks so much for your time, man. I really appreciate it.
Hey, my pleasure, man. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. You started on piano and then trumpet, and then you switched over to guitar. What was the trigger for that, man?
Oh, the guitar, here's what happened. You know, a friend of mine had this Beatles complete book. Remember, I don't know if you ever remember, this very fat Beatles complete book with a black cover on it.
I do remember.
And he had
that.
An electric guitar, you know, a very inexpensive one, and a little amp. And I'd never seen an electric guitar before. I didn't really know anything about the guitar. I played those other instruments from when I was young. For some reason, you know, our parents were big on having all the kids in my family take piano lessons, you know.
That's great.
And I wasn't really into it or anything. I played a couple of things, whatever. So I saw this guy's guitar in the room, And they had like pictures of how to play the chords, the tabs, you know. Yeah. So he didn't really play it at all. So I would noodle around on this thing. And then I was able to teach myself a couple of chords just by looking at the chart. And I took to it pretty quickly. So all of a sudden, you know, he's like, I don't know how to play this thing at all. You just come over to my house once in a while. Now you can play it. So I really liked it, you know. Hmm. And then from the Beatles, I liked the Beatles when I was a kid. I love them now. But at the time when I was a kid, when I heard the Rolling Stones, then everything changed. Because there was something about the heavier side, you know, that was more appealing to me. And back then I got the little 45 that had like Satisfaction on it or something, or Jumpin' Jack Flash, you know. And once I had that, everything changed. And I forgot all about those other instruments. And just totally, once I got the guitar thing going when I was 9 years old, I never stopped.
And your folks were supportive? They got you a guitar and they...
There was an acoustic, an old nylon string acoustic in the basement. So I got that out, started noodling around on that. And eventually I won a raffle at a music store. I got a better guitar. I was going to this music store to get guitar strings, you know, as a little kid.
Yeah.
And they were like, hey, put your name in the hat and, you know, there's a chance for you to win a guitar. So I put my name in that, and I threw my name down, put it in this thing, and I got a phone call. I won the instrument.
That's so cool.
I better guitar. And then when I was like 11, my dad got me my first electric guitar, which was a U-Vox High Flyer.
Is that what you auditioned on with Dokken?
Oh, no. I wish I still had, but no. I got a Les Paul then when I was 13. As time progressed, and I got endorsements and stuff. I had a Kramer endorsement when I was a young kid. I sent a demo tape into them, and off the tape, I got a phone call. They endorsed me and gave me a couple instruments, and I played those for a number of years.
That's awesome, man. Very cool. All right. Walk me through this one, man.
Yeah.
Instead of having formal lessons, he played along to his favorite musicians, Randy Rhoads, Eric Clapton, and George Lynch. Like, how did that happen at that younger age?
When we were kids, you know, we had the tape, we had a cassette tape machine, or we had a record player, you know, and you were able to sort of take the record and slow the record down a little bit, you know, it would change the pitch, but you could slow it down really slow, and you can sort of, there was no internet back then. It's like today you want to learn how to play a guitar solo, you can go look up how to play Eruption or anything, go to YouTube, there's everything there. Back then, it's like you didn't really know how to play it. You had to try and figure it out. Like, I didn't exactly know how to play Eruption properly like I could today if I looked at it. Or, you know what I mean?
Sure.
So in a way, that was sort of good because you would take the ideas that you would learn thinking you were doing it the right way, you know, as opposed to trying to copy somebody exactly, you know.
So yeah.
I ended up learning these licks not really the correct way, which was probably better, you know. So – yeah, when I was a kid, that's how I did it. You know, I didn't really have, you know, my parents didn't really want to give me so much money at the time, you know, to go do too many lessons or whatever. That came later as I had a job. I took a couple lessons with different local people. There's some great local talent where I grew up. But when I was young, you know, 15, 16, you listen to a record and figure it out.
Mm.
So that's really how I learned, you know, getting all the early records, you know.
You know what? I just thought of something. And you remember Zebra, right? Because you grew up on the...
Of course.
Dude,
I grew up on Island. Randy Jackson. Wonderful.
I interviewed Randy like 2 weeks ago. His interview comes out, I think, this Friday. Great fucking... It was great. He was really cool.
Nice. I met him a number of years ago. You know, I saw them open up for Aerosmith at NASA Coliseum.
Wow.
In the 80s, probably. It was
what
really,
a show.
Yeah. So, yeah, they were big Long Island band. The two biggest bands from where I grew up was Twisted Sister and Zebra.
Yeah.
Those two on Long Island that were the big ones.
I'll send you his interview. It was pretty amazing. Yeah. Like the serendipity that was involved with them getting signed. It was almost, it had to be like some higher power of the universe. I mean, the things that had to happen for them to get signed was almost unbelievable. You know, it was really a good story. I just make a note, man. It was cool. Okay, so then, like, was your actual thought process grunge is in? I don't like this. Let me go become a lawyer. I mean,
that was a lot later. That was after I moved to California, which was like 91. I had a band. After the war, you know, I was in Warlock.
Yeah.
We toured. I had that gig for a number of years.
You made albums, right?
Yeah.
I remember that band.
It was on Force Majeure.
Yeah.
And toured Europe. And the band at the time was myself with Tommy Henriksen, who's a great friend and is in Alice Cooper and the Hollywood Vampires now, and Bobby Rondinelli, who was a pleasure to play with because he was in Rainbow. And my first concert I ever went to at the Madison Square Garden was Rainbow and the Scorpions. So, you know, to be in a band with the guy I was watching headline Madison Square Garden and, you know, numbers, a thrill for me. And I love Bobby. He's a great guy. So the band that we've had in Warlock was a great band. And, you know, we were young and we wanted to have our own band. And we were able to find a singer and we got signed to Atlantic Records. With the band was called Big Trouble. So it was the singer was Eric St. Michaels, who's also still a friend of mine. He lives in Switzerland and he has a band. So it was the four of us. We had a deal, and unfortunately, like many other record deals, you know, there was issues with management and the label, and you know, nothing ever ended up coming out. So I started another band, moved to Los Angeles. That was 91.
What made you move out there? That's a pretty big move, like fucking across the country. It's not like from Connecticut to New York, you know.
What happened was, it was 1991. I had a guy fly out from Los Angeles who played bass, and he was staying at my house. We were putting a band together. I found a singer, and I had a drummer. At the same time, I actually got a call from Alice. My friend Greg Smith, who I knew from Devious, was in Alice Cooper.
Okay.
He called me. Vinnie Moore just quit. He said, "Hey, if you want the gig, they want you. Can you come now?" And you know, I didn't do it because I wanted to have my own band. So you know, retrospect, hindsight's 20/20. Maybe I should have. I don't know. But
you don't know.
I guess if I did it, my life history would have changed because I had my own band. The bass player from California said, "Look, I'm only going to play with you if you move to LA because everything's happening in LA. I don't want to live in New York." And I wanted to come out to LA too because I didn't really like New York. I hate the cold.
Yeah.
Didn't like the winters in Long Island, so I said, "Okay, let's move." So then we all move out here. There was three of the four of us living in a 2-bedroom apartment with, you know, very little money. Rotating the bedroom, someone would sleep on the couch. It was like that. And then we started to get a little momentum out here, but then all of a sudden that Nirvana single hit, and everything that I knew about what I wanted to do as a soloist, you know, with a guitar player. Back then there was bands, you know, featuring guitar players as playing solos, you know.
Sure.
The whole solo section of the song just disappeared.
Yeah.
Nirvana came. It wasn't cool to play leads anymore. It was not, you know, so the whole thing with that Smells Like Teen Spirit song, just all of a sudden everything changed. And as soon as it changed, I'm like, you know, what am I going to do? I don't want to play grunge music. I'm not into this. This isn't, I'm not saying it's bad. It just wasn't for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I had been practicing to do or aspiring to do my whole life. So my dad said to me, "Well, you know, here's your options. You can either do that and start, you know, do your band." And at the time I had a job selling computer printer parts over the phone, had to get up at like 5 a.m, sell to the East Coast. And I didn't like that job, you know. I was just barely getting scraping by. He said, "So your options are either you can, you know, stay with your job, or you can go get a job in like a music store, or you know, you got to go to school. You have to go to law school." I already had a 4-year degree at that point. You know,
where'd you go to undergrad?
I went to Hofstra.
Okay, yeah,
Went in, dropped in, dropped out because I would go on the road with the band. Got Warlock, dropped out for 2 years. So it took me a while to finish, just because I was so intermittent with it.
But I give credit to you for sticking that out, because that's pretty unusual, because it's really, you know, when you're a kid, you're not thinking long term. You're thinking, fuck that. I don't want to do this.
I just wanted to play music. But, you know, I had parents but my mother was a school teacher dentist.
Okay. So they were sort of academic, when you come from an academic family, you have to kind of finish school.
Yeah. They said, you know, they would push me towards that, you know. And look, in retrospect, I actually had the benefit of them paying for my college. Yeah. You know, I paid for law school, but that's a big deal because most kids don't have that privilege. You know, a lot of people have, you know, as it was, I did law school. I had a ton of student loans and I was done. But so anyway, the grunge thing comes in and I realized, you know what, I don't want this for my life. I don't want to wake up every morning at 5 o'clock and sell computer parts for $200 a week. Just I don't want to do that.
And so you just went to school. Were you working at the same time you're going to school?
I was just working at that job. I had already finished. This was in Los Angeles. I already had my 4-year degree from the East Coast before I moved out here. So I was working at that job. And then it was also, you know, at the same time, my mom passed away.
Oh, man, sorry.
Yeah, thank you. It's still a long time ago already. But she passed away in April of 92. And then as soon as that happened, I just saw it right there for some reason, mentally abandoned ship on the music completely. And I thought it was going to be done. Like, in my mind, I'm done. It's over. I'm not ever doing it again. I didn't play guitar for a couple. I got into law school. Focused on that, and I'd play once in a while on the weekends, but there was so much, you know, work and studying involved in the law school experience that it didn't give me much time to do anything.
Yeah, of course.
And it was a result of going to law school that got me back into the music business, ironically.
Go ahead, explain.
I represented Jeff Pilson on a case.
Oh, that's how you met?
Yeah.
That is wild.
Me, because he was in a band with Tommy Hendrickson. And then, but one day I was in court on a particular day. I started my own practice in 97. I was in court.
So you work, hold on a second. You worked for someone for a couple of years?
No.
Oh, you started right out of school.
I worked for someone as soon as I graduated law school. There's a 3-month gap between that and the bar exam, something, okay. 3 or 4 months. In that 3 or 4 months, I worked for someone else. I passed the bar exam the first time. The day I got my pass results, I quit and said to him, hey, I'm opening my own office in that building next to you.
So you had gotten that 3 or 4 months probably gave you enough experience to see, okay, I basically know how to run this shit. And
not really. There's a lot to running a law practice, but it gave me some experience. What it really did was it gave me enough. I didn't like the guy I was working for, so it gave me enough know-how to realize I don't want to work for anyone else.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially not this guy.
Yeah.
You know, I was only there 3 or 4 months. He went through 6 or 7 assistants. Nobody wanted to stay with him. He was misery. But I made friends with another attorney in that office. And that attorney, as soon as I quit, he called me right away and said, hey, I need help on this big case I have. Can I hire you to do a whole bunch of things for me? So I immediately got a lot of work right away.
Great.
So much so that I actually hired 3 other lawyers to work for me right away.
Wow.
Yeah. And there was a lot of work. Yeah, go ahead.
So everything lined up for you.
Yeah. Right away, it seemed to go pretty well, you know, and then the guy I didn't like called me back, and his one associate quit, who was the only one who knew his case. So he said, can you come back to work for me? I said, I'll come back to work for you, but you have to pay me X amount a month. Plus I'm keeping all the other work I got through the guy in your firm who sent me the work. And he said, okay. So then,
good for you.
Yeah. So that's how I sort of started it, you know.
Are you, because I've been working for myself for like a long, I don't know, 1999, I think. And I don't mean this in an arrogant way. I'm not really employable. Like, I can't work. No, you know what I mean? Do you feel that way?
At this point, you know, I think the guy I originally worked for those couple months, I think he recognized that in me. He said to me, I remember he called me like a cowboy or something. He said, you're too much of like a cowboy to work for someone else.
Yeah.
And I'm like thinking, you know what? He's right.
Yeah.
I'm just not that type of person to work for someone else. Mm. I just didn't want that from my past. I just knew I didn't like it. I wanted to do.
Yeah. I'm the same. Yeah. I could never work for somebody. It would kill me. And you know, it's funny because my kids are older now and my kids call me. Like, my one son is 28 and he was calling me and saying, oh, I had a shitty day, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, Nick, hey, that's what you do, man. You know, that's why I work for myself, but that's not without its headaches. But man, you got to get used to this shit, man. I mean, you know, it's not your gig.
There's plus and minuses in both ends. Work for yourself. There's no one to blame but yourself, but you know, you're taking all of the responsibility too. So.
Well, I prefer that.
Yeah,
I trust that. I trust me taking all the responsibility a lot more than someone taking the responsibility for me, you know?
Yeah, I agree. So. Oh, so getting back to what happened. So then,
You know,
I went to my dad's for dinner after that day in court. I checked my office voicemail and I had a message from Jeff Pilson saying, hey, could you come down and play? We need a guitar player. Can you come play on some tracks for us tonight? And it was a weeknight and I heard it and I was remembering initially thinking in my head, no way. I was nighttime already. I hung up the phone. My father said to me, who was it? I'm like, oh, it was a client, a friend of mine, and a client asked me if I can go play some guitar solos for his band. And he didn't say what it was, a Dokken thing. I thought it was for, I didn't even know Dokken was together at the time.
Oh.
I knew this band called War and Peace. So I figured it was for that or one, some other project he may have had, you know? And it was my dad who pushed me into it. He said, go. I'm like, really? Why would I do that? I'm like, I haven't touched the guitar in a long time. You know, I really haven't been in it for years. And I don't want to drive down to Redondo Beach. It's like 8 o'clock. I don't even have any, I'm in a suit. So my dad pushed me into it.
That was really cool.
Had he not have pushed me into it that night, I never would have been in the band. You know? So I got there. I didn't have the tie on anymore, but I was dressed in the suit, knocked on the studio door, and then Don opened the door. So that I had no idea whatsoever that this was for Dokken.
Right.
So Don, I'm certainly he had to have been very skeptical. He opened the door, and in true Don fashion, all that happens is this. The door opens, and I see Don, you know, with his arm comes out of the window of the door with a Les Paul in his hand. So the door opens, it's like he literally puts a Les Paul out the door. Here, play. Like, okay, what do you want me to play? He's like, just play a solo. It's an E. I'm like, can I hear it first? He's like, no, just play. From his perspective, yeah, I got my bass player telling me he's bringing his lawyer down to the studio
to play some solos. Mr. Lawyer, let's see what you could do.
I would have said to him, why are you wasting my time? Come on.
Yeah, yeah.
So, although now that I know Don, he's more open-minded. You know, now I could see why he would. He's very open-minded when it comes to things like that.
That's wild, man. It's good that your dad. How cool is that your dad pushed you? How cool is that your dad pushed you, though?
Yeah, if it wasn't for him, I never would have had this job.
That's fantastic, man.
I would have been in this band. Yeah, 100%.
Wow, that's really wild. Honestly,
yeah.
Your childhood was good. It sounds like growing up on the island. Sounds like you had a pretty.
Yeah, childhood was good. I didn't like Long Island. I hated it there. It wasn't for me. Didn't like the winters. Would go to school with my hair was long. I was a walker. I had to walk to school. And my hair would freeze, literally freeze by the time I got to school. And we didn't live too far from the airport, and I would look up at airplanes going by thinking, one of these days, man, one of these planes take me out of here.
Oh, really? So you always wanted to leave?
I always knew from the get-go, New York is not for me. I didn't like the weather. I thought it was too dirty. Just wasn't for me. And I felt like the whole music thing was out in Los Angeles at the time. So,
is your dad still on the island?
No, he moved here right when I finished law school. He's been here since '96.
Oh, that's really cool. So you get to hang out with your dad now. That's really nice.
And until recently, we moved within a half a mile of each other.
Oh, that's fantastic, man.
Yeah,
I'm sure he really appreciates that. That's really cool.
Yeah.
That's
thinking
great,
about this with you, yeah, I owe the whole career thing to him.
Yeah, I mean, that was just so cool because it would have been so easy for him to be selfish and say, hey, man, I really want to spend time with you. I've been looking forward to it. You just passed the bar. Let's celebrate.
He could have easily said, "What? You can't go anywhere. We're having dinner."
Right.
And he could have said that.
No, that's what I'm saying. I think that was so cool. It's so weird how I always marvel at the stories I hear of how, you know, literally lives change on the hinge of almost like I made a left turn instead of a right turn, you know.
Really, it was really that, because, you know, frankly, remember, I genuinely can tell you, I didn't want to go. I hadn't played guitar like really much in 3 years, let alone go down to a studio and play on someone else's guitar. I didn't have any guitar with me.
Hmm.
It's coming from my, you know, I was coming from my office.
Yeah.
It was later at night. I had a drive to Redondo Beach from from Brentwood.
Is that far?
It's put this way. It's not that far, but it's too far to drive when you're not really feeling it.
Yeah. Yeah. After working.
I mean, it's probably like, you know, 25 to 30 mile drive.
Hmm.
You know,
that's amazing, man. When you first started playing professionally, what were some of the bigger surprises, like business-wise, that you're like, oh, I wasn't expecting this?
Oh, well, before or after I became a music attorney. I knew better.
Before.
Well, before, I was naive, and of course, I didn't know a whole bunch. And on the very first tour I did, you know, I was getting paid much, much less than everyone else in the band. And I didn't know that.
This was
This
was with your band.
Warlock.
Yeah. Oh, okay. This was Warlock.
Yeah.
Okay.
So eventually I found out and I was not all that happy. Although, you know, I was, you know, not as senior a musician as everyone else in the band. So, but still I wasn't getting a whole bunch, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then then later on, after the first Warlock record, Gene Simmons was going to produce our next one. And one morning he called me and he had his own ideas. And, you know, I don't play like Angus Young at all.
No.
He called me up and he said he wanted me to play with like an Angus Young type of guitar sound. And he wanted me to play more like Angus Young. And as soon as I had that call with him, I hung up thinking, I'm out.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do that.
Well, that's not who you are. I mean, musically, that makes no sense. I mean, the whole point of a musician is like to match your inside and your outside. That's why you become a musician.
Yeah.
That's really weird.
Yeah, I wanted to do what I wanted to do. So, you know, I was naive when I was a kid, and I didn't realize that if you don't know what you're doing, especially from a business perspective in the music industry, boy, you could really get taken for a ride. Because even as a lawyer, the music law is quite complicated. Publishing and royalties, it's not that easy. You know, it's hard. It could be difficult for attorneys to argue about it, let alone expect a musician to understand how it worked.
Sure.
You know, yeah.
You realize you're probably one of the few people like ever, like probably a handful of people have told Gene Simmons no. Seriously.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if I even told him no. I just think I got off the phone call thinking I'm out.
Yeah.
I remember hanging up, calling the other guys in the band saying, hey, I'm not going to be moving forward with this thing. I was the first one out. And we already sort of had the singer and something on our way to happening with that Atlantic Records deal that we had, you know, so.
Wow. Tuition, man, we all pay tuition in our careers. And I was wondering if you'd be kind enough to maybe share one or two mistakes you made along the way. And what were the lessons you learned from the mistakes?
Mistakes as a guitar player?
Yeah. I mean, professionally, not necessarily like with playing, mistakes like, you know, just things mistakes you made and like you learned something from it. Like whether it's, you know, doing something on stage or not doing something on stage or not saying the wrong thing to the wrong person.
I think the biggest, in retrospect, looking back, I think the biggest mistake that I made was when I got into Dokken. I love Don, but Don could also be very direct. Don was pushing me very, very hard the first like year or two. And I think in retrospect, his pushing me really helped me, you know. And I think that now looking back, and I thanked him for this in later years, you know, looking back at it, I think that maybe I was just too young at the time. I probably should have been more receptive to it and not as resistant in the beginning. But you know, that's I guess how you learn. You know? In retrospect, though, it was helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he was like pushing you like a big brother or a father figure, kind of almost.
Yeah. I mean, look at it from his perspective too. I mean, he wanted me to be the best I could be as quickly as that would be possible. You have to also understand at the time I joined, I hadn't been on stage from 1991 through 1990 for like a number of years, you know, 2, 3, 4 years. So, you know, there was a readjustment period and
sure.
he had different ideas than I did at the time in terms of what I thought I should do and what I shouldn't do. And, you know, in retrospect, I should have, he was right.
Yeah, it's interesting. You left the music business because you didn't want to change the style of music that you like playing. You go get your law degree and literally that next day you get hired to play the music you've always wanted to play. It's like, fuck, wait a minute. What's going on here, man?
This really was a strange twist. You know, Dokken was one of my favorite bands as a kid.
Oh, they were great. You kidding?
So to get in it, still looking back, I mean, what are the odds?
Of this whole thing, what are the odds?
I was a kid playing Dokken to Dokken records in my bedroom at 15 or 16, however old I was, you know.
Yeah.
And then later end up getting into that band. I mean, what statistically, like what would the odds of that be?
Not very high, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's talk gear for a few minutes, man.
Sure.
What's your go-to guitar right now? And what other couple of guitars would round out your top three?
My go-to, I've sort of two that I rotate with. And one is this black and white Charvel that I have. It's a custom shop. And for just for some reason, this one seems to sound better than everything else I have. I don't even understand it. Frankly, when you listen to the guitar acoustically without even when it's not even plugged in, it sounds terrible.
Really? Because that's totally opposite to most.
It doesn't sound good. I don't think it sounds good acoustically at all. I don't understand it. So you plug it in and it's just the thing's a sledgehammer.
Wow.
We use a lot of rental gear on the road, and for some reason this guitar just turns okay amps into great amps. Literally.
That's
like
great.
A mediocre amp becomes a really good amp with this guitar. A good amp becomes an amazing amp. It just has all of the right frequencies from top to bottom, this thing.
That's awesome.
Yeah. When I first got it, it really didn't. I had a friend of mine came out once, and he had this special technique of putting – I heard about this, that he put something under the pickup, some sort of goop. I don't even know what it is. And he did that procedure to this guitar, and it went from sounding not so great to being the best thing I had. So then, of course, I had him do every single guitar I owned.
Yeah, absolutely.
And most of them got better, but still this one's the best one. And then other than that, I have this brown one that Adam Reaver made for me. What's that?
I was going to ask you if it's a Charvel, but you said it's a...
It's a guitar that Adam had made for me.
Mm-hmm.
I have like an issue with my shoulder, and he just made this guitar for me, and it literally weighs like 5 pounds.
Wow.
It might have even been under that when
That's
I first got it.
Nutty, and man.
He's just a total bro, and I just love that guitar. And it got me through a really tough time too when I was struggling physically. And so those are the two I seem to toggle between, you know?
Yeah.
A bunch of other ones, but just for some reason, those are the ones that stand out as, you know, the best two.
Do you still have your black Les Paul that you got?
I still do. I think maybe that's the reason I destroyed myself.
Yeah, that's a
13-year-old kid holding a 12-pound guitar.
Yeah, those are.
I can't hold it today. I took it out the other day to show someone. I'm like, oh my God, this thing's a boat. Boat anchor.
You got rotator?
No, I had some rare condition called thoracic outlet syndrome.
Mm.
I was born with extra ribs in my neck.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's 1 in 10,000 people.
Holy crap.
As a result of that, I didn't have enough space in my where the nerve bundle comes out of your neck. So I ended up getting like 2 ribs taken out and a couple of muscles from my neck taken out. It was a tough time. I had surgery at the same time Don had a surgery too, and it was right when the Broken Bones record was coming out, and it was really a shame because we didn't get to really tour that record, and Don and I both put just like an incredible amount of effort and time into that one, and I really liked that album, and it was very disheartening, you know,
yeah.
To come out and just sort of, you know, I don't feel like we got to really promote it properly. So
are you finished rehabbing a thing? Is it okay now? Or
it's always an issue for me. I have to always be careful with it, but it's stabilized, you know, thank God it doesn't affect my playing. What affects me more than anything with it is like office work. I can't really reach out with my arms over a desk.
Sure, sure.
Or if I do, it starts really acting up, and I have to put ice on it, and I get into pain, and it's a difficult thing. So, you know, coincidentally, I was on the road, and I hardly ever do the social media thing, which I probably should do more of, but I just am not on it as much as I should. But I happened to check my social media, and a girl emailed me on the Facebook page. And she said, hi, she was in her young 20s. She still is. I think she was, I don't know, early 20s at the time. And she said, I was diagnosed with bilateral thoracic outlet syndrome. I can't feel my hands. I play guitar. I don't know what to do.
Oh, my God.
So I immediately texted her. Here's my phone number. Call me.
Hmm.
She called me right away, and she told me what was going on. I said, look, you know, I'm not a doctor, but it sounds to me like you better get to someone immediately. And sure enough, she did. And she had the same surgery that I had. And I sent her to Adam, and Adam built her another light guitar like he did for me.
That's so funny.
Yeah, yeah.
John Levin playing rock and roll, saving lives, and suing the shit out of people all in the same week. Nice, man. Very cool.
But we're still friends. She actually came to one of my shows. We finally got to meet at the M3 Festival. Her name is Meghna.
Oh, that's really cool, man.
I think it's Meghna Balakumar or something. Well, I'm not sure if I got the last name right. But she's really nice girl. She's talented. And, when you have the same experience that someone else has and it's a rare one.
Yeah.
It's sort of like you can bond with them because they.
Yeah, there's a camaraderie there. Yeah.
She's a really nice kid, you know.
That's great, man. You probably did a good thing there, man. Hey, name a couple of players that you've enjoyed playing with and maybe another couple that you'd like to play with.
Oh, wow. We play with Extreme once in a while, and Nuno Bettencourt is just one of my favorite players, you know, in addition to being a friend. He's just so great. You know, I love the way he plays. I'm a big Michael Schenker fan.
Oh, God, who's not? I mean, that guy.
Love Michael Schenker. And, we played with Michael a number of times, too. And, that's always a thrill, you know.
God.
He's in his own league.
Yeah.
And then after you get out of his league, then you can go to the mortals.
yeah.
So.
Schenker made so many great, I mean, that stuff we did with UFO is just, I still listen to that regularly, man.
Oh, totally unbelievable. Yeah. So I'm a big Michael Schenker fan, big, you know, Nuno Bettencourt. There's a ton of great players. I mean, there's a guy, I don't know how well known he is, but there's a player named Doug Rappaport. He plays in
plays Edgar with Edgar Winner. Yeah, yeah.
He is a phenomenal player.
Yeah. I spoke with him.
And I saw him. I run into him at the NAMM show, and I saw him play. And he's just an amazing talent.
Yeah, I know who that is. We spoke. That's really cool. And who's some people you'd like to jam with?
Oddly, I'm not a huge jammer. Although I've been asked to do it a lot. I did it once. I went down to that, you know, the bowling alley here. They have the jam night at this bowling alley here in Hollywood, Lucky Strike.
Is that what it is? They have
but it's a professionally done thing. And I mean, like Nuno, he goes down once in a while, and it's not just some haphazard thing. They arrange it well. So I went down and I played with Doug Pinnick. And
from King's X.
Yeah, I'm a big King's X fan, so I was really excited about doing that. And yeah, that was fun. I can't remember who else I played with that night, but that's the way to sort of do it. And I'm asked to do that fairly frequently, but for some reason, shy away from the jamming thing.
Why is that?
Yeah. I don't know. I just, I don't like to sort of do anything that's really on the fly and not rehearsed at all. There's no rehearsal for that. You just go and play, you know? So I don't know. Some guys seem to really like to do it. I just was never someone to do it that frequently.
Yeah. You know? Desert Island Discs, man. No particular order. Knee jerk reaction. Top three.
Go ahead. You're telling me, or you want me to?
You tell me your top three Desert Island Discs in no particular order.
Oh boy. Okay. Van Halen, Fair Warning.
Mm-hmm. That's the number one Van Halen album that people pick.
Is that?
Yeah, it is. Funny enough.
Wow, this is a tough one. Believe it or not, I have to take Eagles' Greatest Hits.
Oh, that's the number one selling album, period, I think I read recently.
I heard.
Yeah.
I'm a huge, 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 huge Eagles fan.
Yeah. It's hard not to be kind of like our age bracket and not be an Eagles fan, you know?
And then I'll take Queen Greatest Hits.
Very cool, man.
Take those three. Yeah.
Most important things, John, you've learned about yourself through your career experience and life in general?
The things that I'm the most proud of that I've done have nothing to do with music or my career. The things that I'd say along the way, I was able to like help a couple of people serendipitously. And those are the things that I look upon the most, that I'm the happiest about. There was one, we got to a gig once and there was a gentleman that had a problem with his leg. And I looked at it and I'm not a doctor, but I said to him, hey, you know, what's going on, man? You got something going on there. And he said, oh, I was in an accident and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, hey, I'm not a doctor, but I think your leg is like gangrenous.
Holy crap.
You need to get to a hospital. And he was reluctant to go. And I'm like, look, I'm sorry to tell you this. You're not going to go. I'm going to find the owner right now. So I went and found the owner of the place. I'm like, this guy works for you. He has to get to a hospital now. You know, whether he and the owner's like, look, you're going now. And it turned out the guy contacted me afterwards and said, hey, thank you. They told me if I would have waited one more day, I would have either lost my leg or my life.
Wow. How cool is that, man? Good for you.
Something that made me really happy.
That's some good credits.
To do something for someone else, you know?
That's really nice.
And other than that, it's like the occasional comment I get from someone who says I brought them some sort of happiness and inspiration. Hmm. Those are the things that mean the most to me of all of it.
Very cool, man. Are you sure you're a lawyer?
I'm sorry?
Are you sure you're a lawyer? That's not.
All right. Look, so I got a strike against.
That's not very congruent with being a lawyer. That's very cool, man. Best childhood memory, John.
Oh, wow. Best childhood memory. When I was a kid, there was a local band called Syntron.
All right, George.
You know George Syntron?
No, I'm trying to get him on my show because I used to listen to Metal Shop, Fingers Metal Shop, and they always used to play Syntron. And I was like, fuck, this guy was great. And he plays with Trans-Siberian Orchestra now.
I didn't know that. Really?
Yeah, he's playing with TSO. Oh,
that makes me happy to hear he's doing well.
Yeah.
He's such a wonderful talent. I was just a little kid, and I would sneak out. I wasn't old enough to get into the clubs, but I had my fake ID, and I would sneak out of the house to go see him.
Yeah.
One night I got – and they would go on late. And back in the day, the clubs in New York were open till 4 in the morning.
Yeah.
I came home one night at like 5 or, you know, 5:30, very late. Mm-hmm. And my parents were up. My father was on his way to go to work, and I was coming into the house. So, that didn't really go over too well. But, I have good memories of going with a friend of mine, Jeff, who grew up together, Jeff Chambers. We used to go to the shows, and sometimes I wouldn't get in. He was a year older than me, Jeff. He'd have better ID and a better shot. And the rule was, all right, John, you can come, but if you don't get in, you're sitting in the car.
Yeah.
I'm taking you home. And once or twice, I think I sat in the car.
That's funny, man. Yeah, Syntron, that's so funny. I used to love – he had a couple of big hits, but I don't know why they never took off or anything.
You know, who knows? It's the crapshoot of the music industry. But if you do happen to interview him, please definitely bring it up that I mentioned him.
Man, I will.
He's a wonderful talent, and let him know what a big influence he was on me.
And in fact, man, I'll reach out to him again because I really want to get him on the show because I dug his music the same way you did, and I'll make mention of it. Let me just make a note here. And I'll let you know if that happens, and I'll say in the interview.
Yeah.
You might have answered this, but tell me something about yourself people would be surprised to hear or might find a little odd.
I'm a really boring guy. Maybe they can gather that from this interview. I'm no Wild Mick Brown, right?
Oh, man.
Yeah, I'm just a regular guy. I don't, really do much. I don't really go out that often, really.
You must work out because you got a high energy level, which I dig, but you're pushing me and most people don't push me because I have a very high energy level. So I'm aware that I need to rise up a bit here.
You want to watch here? Watch me work out. That's espresso in there.
Yeah, there you go, man. Good for you.
That's my workout.
There you go. You don't work out really?
I do a little bit, when I have the time. For me, for my injury, best thing for me, swimming.
Oh, cool, cool. Yeah, that's so good. That's a great workout though, man. That's the best.
It's the best thing I could do. I mean, anything else starts bothering me right away.
Yeah, I'm sure.
So, I actually have this rib in the garage. The doctor, the rib, they took this rib out right here, this big rib.
And you have it in the garage?
The doctor gave it to me. I brought it home, had a bunch of gore on it too. And it was wrapped up in some plastic. And then my friend Stacy Blades was over with his wife, Paula. And she said, hey, give this to me. I'll clean it and make you something out of it and whatever. I'm like, okay. So I gave her the rib. And then Stacy and Paula ended up moving from LA to Vegas. And right when they were moving, I'm like, I called Paula. I'm like, hey, Paula, do you mind if I have my rib back before you leave?
It's been with me
47 years. I'd like to get it back. And she said, oh, let me find it. The cat actually got at it. the cat got at it.
Cat ate your gristle.
She said the cat got at the rib, but I got the rib back, luckily, and eventually I'm going to use it to do something weird, like maybe an inlay for the guitar fretboard would be cool.
Yeah, something with music would be cool.
Yeah, I mean, I can't just discard it. I had it for a very long time. You know, maybe it wasn't that much use to me.
That's so funny that you have your rib.
And nonetheless, I have it.
Most important thing your dad taught you?
Honesty.
And mom?
Diligence. Persistence. Stay in school.
Yeah, well, it worked, man.
But, you know, if you think about it, those are pretty good things. I mean, you can't really get good at anything today if you're not persistent and diligent.
Oh, hell yeah.
Granted, she didn't want me being a professional musician. But regardless of whatever your career is, you know, I think in today's world, things have really changed because back when I grew up, you were lucky if you want to go outside and have some fun, you had a stick ball bat, a broomstick.
Yeah.
You get a couple balls and a broomstick, or people had a baseball glove and a baseball. You didn't have, like today, the kids, they have, you know, all these video games and they're fun, you know. So it's a lot more difficult to say, I want to spend my entire day going up and playing my practicing guitar. But for me, that's all I did. I just love music and I couldn't wait to get done with like dinner so I can go up and play my guitar.
Sure.
So I think in today's world, I don't know how much of that there is. You know, I don't have kids, so I don't know to what degree. I'm sure there are some that are, but there's a lot of distractions.
No. Are you single or married?
I'm single. Girlfriend.
Have you ever been married?
I was many years ago.
Does being a family attorney scare the shit out of you to get married?
Look, I guess to each – for me, it isn't something I would do, but – you know, for other people, you know, I don't judge.
Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes it is what it is. Everyone has to make their own choices. And, you know, some marriages work, right?
Got to look
at the positive side.
Yeah, yeah. No, but it's just I would scare the shit out. I would imagine like it would be – it's almost like it's – you're unwinding messes all day long. I would
– Yeah, that's the job I do. The job I do is to be – you know, I take the marriage apart.
Right.
I'm a mechanic.
Right.
It is nothing emotional and it's nothing about for me.
Of course.
I can't get emotionally attached to it. I'm a mechanic.
Yeah. Right.
That's why I know how to take them apart. Just like it's a business deal.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Really, from the law's perspective, that's sort of what it is.
Yeah. Totally. Business.
You know, as far as all the emotional aspect of it, I understand it's, you know, of course it's difficult, but I tell the clients that, you know, it's less expensive to talk to a therapist than to talk to your lawyer as a therapist.
Oh, hell yeah. But I could see, I don't know that, I mean, nobody gets married anymore anyway, for the most part, but I would think doing that would like almost put you off it, you know, because it's like being a cop, you know, you're constantly dealing with, it's hard to have faith in people if you're a cop, because what do you do for a living all day long is you like unwind the cesspool of people that fuck up things, you know?
Yeah.
And so,
yeah.
It's, you know, it's just hard. So,
yeah.
Best money you ever spent on something?
When I was 16 years old, I worked on this beach club for 3 years to save money, watching a parking lot. And then eventually, when I finally got a license, I was able to park some of the cars. I don't remember. But I watched the parking lot for a number of summers, saved some, and I saved. And I had like $1,000 or $1,100, and I wanted to buy a Charvel.
Oh.
And I went to this store called Grayson's Music, and they had this guitar, this Charvel with a mouth paint job on it. It's called the Big Mouth. And my mother took me, and I remember I was like $100 short. She loaned me the extra money, and I bought it. But I still have that guitar to this day.
The Big Mouth Charvel.
I still have it, yeah. So I guess that would be the best money I spent on a material object. If I could think about it, there's probably something that I spent better on something that was more symbolic, but that
sure.
Was, came to my head.
Great. Any hobbies outside of music?
Oh, not so much. I mean, really, if I have any free time, I like to play, you know?
Yeah.
So I get, the pleasure out of taking the old instruments out of the closet. And, you know, I'm obsessed with sound and tone, even though to other people, it's like maybe such subtle, small degrees of difference. To me, it's like the world.
What are you playing out of now? What kind of amps are you playing out of now?
I like Marshalls, and every time I deviate away from them, I seem to come back to them. And I have a couple of JCM 2000s and I have a 900. For some reason, the amps I have, they don't seem to sound like other amplifiers. I don't know. You know, maybe that's why I took them. They're awful, you know. So they're just what always works for me, although we play so much on the road, it's all rental gear. So my rental gear is just whatever potluck JCM 2000 I can muster up. And sometimes it comes down to opening the backs up and taking tubes out of one amp, putting them into another amp, you know, to try and get working situation for myself, you know, which is, I'm pretty good at that though.
That's good, man. That's good that you're obsessed with tone. You're a musician. You got to be obsessed with tone.
Yeah. I think it's a bug that, you know, I have a friend of mine who, my friend Robbie, were on the phone together all the time talking about pickups and amplifiers and, you know, probably stuff that most people would be like, who cares? But to us, it's just like everything.
Yeah.
You know, of course, the slightest little change and it's just like a big thing for you, you know? So I don't know. I'm still chasing tone at my age.
That's great. That's great. John, I'm asking three more questions and I appreciate your time. It's always funny when I get New Yorkers, the interviews are always like 30 minutes quicker because they talk fast. I'm serious. It's really fucking hilarious. Like every person.
Every time I go to court, I get the same thing. The court reporter tells me to slow down.
Because you're talking too quick.
You're talking too fast. I can't, the stenographer's like, I can't keep up with that. Go, all right. I'm sorry.
Oh, man. Toughest decision you ever had to make or the hardest thing you've had to do?
Dropping out of school. I went, my first 2 years of college, I went to SUNY Albany. It was a 4-year school, but you had to go for 2 years to get it, to try and get into a business school.
Sure.
I got into the business school. The day I got in, I had to tell my parents I'm dropping out of school.
Oh, because you were touring.
I wasn't even touring. I dropped out to join a club band.
Oh, wow.
That was before I had done anything. I wanted to drop out of school to play music. That was a tough one for me to tell my parents.
Yeah. I give you credit though, because I think being older, I definitely did not make decisions for my happiness. And I think I should have, because that's all you have.
Yeah.
You know,
had I not made that decision, everything would have been different for me. That was a tough one. And then moving was not as tough, but that was a pretty ballsy thing to do at, you know, 25 years old.
Yeah.
I had no money. I moved out to Los Angeles with whatever I had saved from, you know, working on, you know, I worked at that beach club, by the way, till I was, you know, for years.
Yeah.
Eventually I became a valet. So I saved some money. I didn't have much when I came out here. I'm sure everyone was thinking he's not going to be able to make it more than 6 months, you know?
Yeah, but did that motivate you? Because stuff like that motivates me. Righteous indignation has done a lot for me, to be honest with you.
I'm sure it motivated me. The craziest thing was, I mean, I had nothing, but I wasn't worried about anything.
Hmm.
You would think I'd be worried, like, where's my next paycheck coming from? Where's my next dollar coming from? But when you're younger, you have more of a tendency to be like happy-go-lucky.
Sure.
You know, yeah. You're young and you don't think about these things. I don't know. For some reason, in my mind, going back to New York was just never an option.
Hmm. Good for you, man.
Yeah.
Best advice you've been given, and who gave it to you, if you can think of it?
Follow your bliss. Don Dokken.
That's great, man. And last question, John, what's been the biggest change in your personality over the last 10 years? And has the change been intentional and deliberate or just a function of aging?
Oh, I just think as a function of aging, you realize what really is important and what isn't. And for me, what's important is, you know, is my family and my true friends. And the set of friends I have, I've been so fortunate that they've all been with me since I'm 15 for the most part.
That's great, man. That's very rare.
Yeah. We're all still totally tight and it's been that way for, you know, coming up on, you know, 35, however long, 37 years.
That's wonderful, man. Congratulations. Yeah. That's really cool.
That's the best thing that's what I've realized. Yeah.
Man, I can't thank you enough for your time. You're a ball of energy. You're a funny guy. I'm really glad I talked to you. And let me tell people where they can find you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. My pleasure.
No, thank you, man. First of all, let's talk about tell people about your law practice. It's the Law Offices of Jonathan D. Levin, and you can find John online at jlattorney.com. What kind of law do you practice? Tell people.
Oh, I do two types. For the predominantly family law, which is divorce, child custody, child support, spousal support, restraining orders.
Restraining orders. I'm not laughing at you. I'm just laughing because, like, that's your norm. Like, you're, and I'm like, oh my God, like, oh, yeah, it's just a different world.
It's a tough job.
Yeah.
But, you can't, she is what it is.
It is what it is, man. Yeah. It is what it is.
And I do some entertainment law, which is typically at this point music. I've done a lot of licensing. Just the music business has changed and disintegrated so much over the past number of years that there's just not a whole lot of work left there.
So what kind of stuff are you doing as far as music law? Because there's a lot of musicians listening to this who might be interested.
What I'll see is an occasional licensing agreement, and I'll see an occasional work for hire agreement when someone is hiring musicians to work to play for them. Mm. Other than that, I mean, you really don't see hardly ever a major label record contract. I don't anyway anymore. Everything's licensing. So that's pretty much it. Occasional clothing license still comes up too. That's not really music, but that's licensing.
Well, cool. And so you could find John again online. It's JL for John Levin Attorney.com. And also, man, if you are a shredder and if you're an intermediate or an advanced player, John actually gives lessons. And let me just tell you right now, I even said to him, dude, that costs you money for your attorney, but the guy loves playing and helping people. And so if you're interested in a lesson, email him. It's John, J-O-N-D, Levin, L-E-V-I-N at gmail.com. I'll say that again. It's John, J-O-N-D, L-E-V-I-N, John D. Levin at gmail.com. Again, intermediate or advanced students only. And, you know, check John out online before you hit him up. And also, Dokken doesn't need me to sell tickets, but go to Dokken.net, D-O-K-K-E-N, and you can see when John's touring around and go say hello to him and tell him you heard him on here and you had a good time. Dude, thank you very much, man. Any final words of wisdom or final legal words of legal advice?
Stay out of trouble. Thanks so much for the call. It's been a pleasure. I really appreciate it.
Likewise, man. Thank you. Everybody, thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this interview, please share it with a friend on your social media channels. We appreciate your support and help. And thanks again to John Levin for spending time with us. I really appreciate it. Check John out online with Dokken and check out his attorney practice, jlattorney.com. Make sure you go to the homepage of everyonelovesguitar.com. Sign up to get on our newsletter list. You get advance notice of guests and you can send in some questions for them. And most important, remember that happiness is a choice, so choose wisely. Be nice, go play your guitar, and have fun. Till next time, peace and love, everybody. I'm out. We hope you enjoyed this show. If you did, subscribe to the Everyone Loves Guitar podcast, and you can do this online at everyonelovesguitar.com or on iTunes. And if you like the show, please leave us a 5-star positive review. The more 5-star reviews we get, the higher our show ranks, and higher rankings mean we get to continue speaking with cool, interesting guests on our show. We'll see you on the next episode, and until then, keep playing your guitar and have fun making music.